right, welcome to Intentional Living. Carrying on with the discussion we had on this topic of adult sibling relationships from my book, The Cain and Abel Syndrome, How to Get Along with Your Adult Siblings. As I said, if you missed the show, listen, you got to go back and hear it. If you missed it, powerful. We had a lot of calls today. We got more we're going to be sharing with you and some from our comment line as well. Who you are today, how you view life, your perspective on life, your relationships have more to do with the siblings you grew up with or didn't grow up with than it does, frankly, with who you choose to marry. Now, I know who you marry has tremendous impact today, but let's face it, we bring into our marriage, we bring into our family those things that sort of shaped us early in life, and those shaping experiences often involve our siblings. Not only mom and dad, but our siblings and our relationship with our siblings. Did you feel you were in competition? Did you feel like you were the boss? Did you grow up with a bossy sibling? Did you learn how to resolve issues with your siblings? I think our homes can be the classroom of learning how to live, learning how to resolve problems, how to get along, how to argue and resolve problems. Maybe here's what happens in marriage. Maybe you grew up in a home where there was a lot of arguing and people disagreed and everybody loved each other. At the end of the day, there was a big hug and we had spaghetti and went to bed. On the other hand, maybe you married someone who said, we never talked about it. Dad wouldn't let us have any disagreements. Dad solved the problems and that's it. So you get into a marriage and you have this spouse of yours who loves to argue and discuss things and a big personality, and you feel threatened by that. See how those differences of how you grow up come into your marriage relationship, and your adult sibling relationship can be a part of that for sure. Okay, I'll tell you what, we got some callers we'll get to and those who have left comments with us. One of the things, and I want you to listen to Julie from Michigan, because she talks about competition and how she was feeling left out, the feeling of being left out, not being a part of the group. Take a listen.
I do have three kids. I have a 20-year-old son and then a 18-year-old daughter. They were 2 years and 7 months apart. And then along came my third child, kind of like a surprise, almost 7 years later. And he is now 11. I would say the sibling rivalry I've experienced the most is competitiveness. And then also my daughter has shared with me her feelings of feeling left out because the way females sometimes are raised compared to males bothers her. So when she was growing up, she wanted to do like archery and stuff like that, and she wanted to be able to camp out and do things like her brothers do, and she doesn't necessarily want to do some of the things that girls have to do, but she just tends to want to do more things like her brothers. I thought that maybe it'd be neat if we could talk more on here about having to do with the difference of raising girls and boys, and if anyone else has experienced this.
Yeah. Well, listen, we grew up in homes. And maybe you're the only girl in a home with all boys. That's going to impact you. Maybe the only boy in a home with all girls. That can impact you too. And the dynamics and expectations, how you get along. I grew up at home, all brothers. I'm the youngest, the baby of three boys. And so I didn't grow up with any sisters. So when I got married, my mom in our home, my dad was, he was more front and center. My mom was very traditional and in support of the family. And so when I got married, I was kind of clueless, you know, growing up with all boys. I didn't know how that was going to work. Maybe Donna would pick up where my mother left off. I don't know. That was a dumb idea, wasn't it, Jennifer? I learned that pretty quickly. But we bring into our marriage relationship a lot of the experiences that we have in the home we grew up in, for sure. All right, let's get to our calls. Abigail has been waiting in Georgia. Hi, Abigail. How are you today?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Go right ahead. What would you like to share?
So I'm in my 30s. I've had a rough relationship with my mother since I was a teenager, maybe around seventh grade. And it progressively got worse. I would say now that I was, that I'm an adult, at times she was a little hard, but looking back, I think my mom just wasn't meant to be a mother. And I say that now being a mother, and I see things. Basically, the last 5 years, maybe four, I've had a falling out with the person, you know, I trusted with my entire life, and that was my sister. You know, she was my best friend, and the last person I thought would do, you know, like wanted nothing to do with me. And I honestly don't know where it came from, but, you know, my daughter is 3 years old, and 3 years ago, my sister was going to marry somebody that she probably shouldn't have married. Long story short, I ended up finding out that I was going to have my daughter on the date of her wedding. And that just, I don't want to put my sister's business out there, but she had a miscarriage, and she was going to be the first one in our family to have a child, you know, the first grandchild.
Now, this is the sister that you have an estrangement with now.
Yes. We don't have a relationship at all. And a part of it, I feel like, is how we were raised. You know, my mom never had a relationship with her mother either, mm-hmm. and had terrible relationships with her siblings, even to this day. So I see that the change have continued.
Yeah, but what I hear, Abigail, is growing up in a home where you didn't have a good relationship with your mom, I'm assuming that was true of your sister as well. You didn't learn how to discuss things or resolve problems or have, quote, normal different differences and talk about them.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. And I grew up with my parents arguing a lot.
Right, so now you're going to have a baby on your sister's wedding, and there's a miscarriage, and there's all this stuff going on. I'm just wondering if there's been just a lot of buildup of little things, big things, but little moments in time, important moments in time, that maybe you just never had a chance to talk through how she was feeling. Maybe she had expectations of how you should respond or what she expected from you, and they weren't met, and she's disappointed, and one thing leads to another, and all of a sudden it's kind of like mom all over again. There's a distance in your relationship.
Yeah.
Does that sound reasonable?
I would say so. I also didn't know how to tell her when I found out I was pregnant. It came at a surprise, not that I didn't want a child, but because I knew what she had gone through. Yeah. She was actually the one who came to me and was like, "You're pregnant." And I was like, "Yes."
And that probably, she had some reaction to that, didn't she?
Yeah, kicked me out of the wedding. I was the maid of honor. I had already done everything for her wedding. She said that she loves me, but she wants nothing to do with me. Mm. And now, mind you, we have a brother. He's the middle child. She doesn't have a relationship with him either.
You do?
My brother and I, yes, we see each other. We try to see each other once a month. You know, we both have kids, have our own families, but we do make that effort of, I'll go to his house, and we just, like, we have fellowship, we just talk, mm-hmm. we reminisce about the old days.
That's good. Well, what do you think? Let me ask you this. What one thing do you think you could do, one thing you could do that might have a breakthrough with your sister? Does anything come to mind?
I don't know if there is, because I have reached out to her. I said, you know, I forgive you, and there's nothing. And that took a lot for me. It was actually my husband who was like, you know.
Yeah, but when you said, I forgive you, did she ask for forgiveness?
No, I forgave her for myself because I had so much.
Right,
anger.
But what I'm saying is she didn't ask for forgiveness, and then she gets a note from you saying, I forgive you. Can you see how she might be saying, what do you mean you forgive me? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, and I hear your heart. Listen, I totally hear your heart, Abigail, wanting to have this relationship with your sister. Let me just encourage you to think about just reversing that a little bit. And sometimes we have to have boundaries in place, but to reach out to your sister, not from the standpoint of I forgive you, but from the standpoint I love you. And my heart aches that we have a brokenness in our relationship. And, you know, I'm sure I played a part in it. I don't know what that means. I don't know. I'll tell you what, I've been around long enough to know that two people always have a part in whatever the relationship is. But take that approach and just give it to her. Put the ball in her court. Let her know you love her and that you want a better relationship with her. And just see what happens. And then continue that relationship with your brother and allow that to grow. I'll tell you what, Abigail, last week we talked about this, and I sent a copy of my out of my own stock of books here to Anita. I want to send you one too. If you hang on, Stephen will get your address. I want to send you a copy of my book, The Cain and Abel Syndrome. I encourage you to read it, to talk about how do we improve the relationship with our adult siblings. And we'll get that to you. Okay. Thank you, Abigail. God bless you. Thank you for sharing your story. Larry, in Michigan.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Yeah. Go right ahead.
Oh, so what triggered this is the lady that mentioned the farm that her brother and father had been working, and then when he died.
Yeah, he died, and then he got it.
And he just got a little house or something.
Exactly.
A quick story. My family was similar. We had a farm back in the day. I'm 70, so you can kind of think, you know, back then there wasn't sprays or any of the things to make it easy yet, except tractors. So you did a lot of hoeing, baling, and all that all the time. And my dad was kind of a dictatorial guy. He'd yell all the time about this needs to get done, that needs to get done. And I'm over 4 years older than my brother, and my sister's a year apart from him. So, you know, I was the oldest guy that seemed to do all the work. But anyways, that's just setting the tone. So over the years, you know, we think that dad's got the farm, you know, he's doing normal things. And we always thought there was something weird going on because he'd be talking to these people on the phone on occasion when we'd be there. And then when my mother died here a few years ago, she was in her 80s and he's a little older. We found out, Dad, your finances, what's going on here? She was kind of paying bills and that was about it. And we find all these huge charge cards that were like $18,000, $20,000. We found big mortgages and all kinds of stuff. And apparently he'd been doing Ponzi schemes with these oil rigs and all kinds of crap for years. And, you know, it put a lot of pressure on all of us because, you know, my brother and me actually were thought at one time, well, one of us could buy the farm, you know, from him if he sold it. But no, he sold it out from under us when we didn't even know about it to somebody we didn't know. And we don't know where the money went because there wasn't any of it there. So it's been a crazy life, and it causes issues between even my brother and me sometimes. We're a little different in age and all that, you know, but the one thing, I guess, because you always say one thing, is that all three of us, we're all believers, have decided over the years is that when all said and done, we will always try to communicate well. And my dad, of course, he's 98 and still somewhat healthy for 98. He just had to go into assisted living this year. So we're like laughing, like, I think he's going to live longer than all of us and torment us forever. but anyways, because he still brings stuff up, you know, it's just how he is. And, you know, but the one thing is we get together, we talk about things. We always do. We're always unanimous on things that we had to do. That's when we had to have the auction right away because he couldn't pay his bills. I mean, he had more going out than he had.
So you had to put all. So you guys had to get together and solve all his problems.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, occasionally my brother and me disagree because we're very different people, but we always try to come back together and move forward. And I guess when I heard her, I say, you know, we got the greatest solution. Just have a dad like that. You don't have no money to worry about because he's already on Medicaid living in assisted living. And, you know,
so you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about it. All right. All right. Thank you, Larry. I got to move on, take a break here. I'm running out of time, but, listen, I'll tell you what, the laughter, the fact that we can be on the same page, you can have a healthy perspective, stay focused on the one thing. I like it. It's a good idea. The power of one thing, right? Being focused on saying, hey, we may have some differences. Got one goal, one thing. We want to do the right thing. God bless you. Let's take a break. We'll be back.
You're listening to Intentional Living with your host, Dr. Randy Carlson. Intentional Living is furnished by Intentional Life Media and is made possible by the generous support of listeners just like you. This program is not a substitute for professional counseling, medical, financial, or legal advice. Intentional Living is not intended to be therapy by radio, but it is intended to help you live an intentional life in Jesus Christ. Randy.
Hey, thank you, Kurt. Let's get back to our calls. Mary's on the line from Arizona. Mary, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go right ahead. From Arizona.
Yes. So my name is Mary. I am the middle child of five siblings. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a Michigan area, and my parents were both blue-collar workers. My childhood that I remember was beautiful. My parents were poor, but they always spent time with us. Mm. When we became teenagers, my mom started drinking, and she was an alcoholic for pretty much the duration of our teen years. When I turned 19, I'm 61 now, she gave up drinking and mentored and helped women in the program for over 45 years. My father died in 2000, and my mom would come to Arizona for the weather for 3 months. After a couple of years, I noticed that she was having a decline in her cognition. I work in long-term care. I've done that for over 20 years. It was very difficult to convince my siblings that she needed some kind of an intervention, but long story short, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer type dementia, mm-hmm. about 5 years ago. Right when the pandemic started, mom needed to go into an assisted living, and she was failing. She wasn't eating. She was doing very poorly. My family and I made a decision to bring her here to live with us. She lived with us for over 2 years and passed away in June. Mm-hmm. I have one sibling, a sister, who disowned all of us over the last year. The conflict between my oldest brother and my oldest sister throughout caring for mom was very difficult. So there were three of us that were kind of on the same page, and then two that were constantly pushing back on, you know, things that I was doing to take care of her that they maybe didn't agree with, such as lying to her. Like if she mm-hmm. said she hadn't eaten in 3 days, I would say to her, Mama, 3 days is too long. Let's get you something to eat, because that's what I've learned in my work. Their perspective was, let's sell mom's house. Let's not tell her we're selling it. She won't know. She won't remember. And then mom comes here and says, you know, they took my house. They took my car. I don't know where any of my belongings are. And it was just a very difficult time communicating.
How is it now? What's the relationship like now?
The relationship now is I speak to my brother periodically. I've had to set some pretty clear boundaries with what I will talk about. Okay, because of my own mental health and needing to take care of myself after caring for mom for, you know, almost 3 years. My sister, who is the oldest sister of the four sisters, she was the one who kind of took care of our family when my mom was drinking. So both her and my brother in Michigan took fantastic care of my mom without having her live with them. In other words, my brother took care of all of mom's household things, took care of her finances. My sister took her to all of her doctor's appointments and was there to take her to get her hair done, and just they both did a beautiful job caring for her until they couldn't anymore.
Well, let me jump in, Mary. I got a couple calls I have to get to, but what I hear you saying is mom was sort of the glue there. Everybody was, until mom needed help. This is not uncommon. You know this if you've been in long-term care. There's a lot of disruption that occurs in families at that moment in time. I call it the sibling moment. That's what you're experiencing. Here's what happens, and I say this to all of us as siblings. It's kind of like a tea bag. Whatever's in a tea bag comes out in hot water. It doesn't come out in cold water as well. Cold water stays in the tea bag. You put it in hot water, it comes out. And I find with families and sibling relationships, when there's a death, there's a crisis, there's addiction, there's money, any number of things, whatever's in that tea bag, whatever the nature of the relationship is like, tends to ooze out. And so I think Mary's call is a reminder, hey, develop the relationship, have good communication, come to some agreements, especially as it has to do with parents. But I would say to parents, it's your job and my job to make sure that we're clear on what we want for our future, how we want to be handled, how our finances and so on, and not leave that for our kids to worry about. Okay? Let me go to Katie is next in Kansas. Katie, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Go right ahead. What's your comment today?
I'm actually on the other side of things. So I am actually a daughter of a sibling group who's been struggling. My mom, my family lost my grandparents in 2020, not due to COVID or anything, but and then 8 months later lost my uncle. And it was a similar situation to what was said previously. It was a farming situation. Mm-hmm. And my grandparents had set up a trust to allow my uncle, who was a farmer, to take over the farm. And then my mom was left a house, and my other two uncles were left houses. And since my uncle's passing, my mom's house that's on 5 acres, and my aunt is now suing my mother over 3 of the 5 acres when she inherited over 1,000 acres herself. But she's fighting my mom over 3 of their 5 acres that they received in that trust.
How are you handling all this? How are you doing?
It's been hard. I've never had a relationship with this aunt. And I've watched them go through court processes, and it's been very hard to watch, like, just a pure hatred.
So something must not have been set up right at the beginning to make all this work well.
Yeah.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Yeah. So there was nothing set up in the trust specifically. There's no specific saying who was to take on any property that was given to a sibling upon their death.
So in other words, the paperwork could have been stronger. Listen, I'm no attorney, but I'll tell you this. It is worth getting a good attorney for your, especially if you have a complex estate where you have assets and property and all that kind of thing. You know, if you don't have anything, that's different. But if you have stuff that could, I'll tell you what, we'll fight over an acre. You just hear 1,000 acres, I'm going to fight over 3. The worst of us and the best of us can come out at times like this. So it's an obligation for us. And Katie's reminding us, get the paperwork done well. Let's take a break, Terry. We'll wrap it up with you in just a minute. Romans 6:1, shall we continue to sin that grace may abound? There's a profound question. In other words, we know we've been saved by grace, but as a result of that, should we continue to sin just so there can be, you know, more grace? There's some people who follow that philosophy when it comes to life. God is so good, I got to really mess up so He can be really good in my life, you know? Genesis 4:9, am I my brother's keeper? Boy, you camp on that one for a while, right? Are we? Of course. God's given us a challenge to meet the needs and help people, reach people. I put the lesson together this month to make us think about the power of questions. And if you look at Scripture, there are so many powerful questions that were asked, sometimes answered correctly and definitively, and other times not so much. And it's a reminder to us the power of the questions that we ask ourselves and about our marriage. Are we asking the right questions? And our family, our finance? Because I believe that the right question at the right time to the right person can be life-transforming. It really can, if we really stop and quiet ourselves to listen. That's the lesson this month. Thank you to our members who have made all of this possible. Your financial support allows us to do the program and create the content and all the things that we do. And I want to thank those of you who have recently joined us from around the country, said, hey, we want to be included in on the ministry. Thank you for doing that. You can join today. Be on the journey with us. We'd appreciate it. As you call during West Coast business hours, 888-888-1717, 888-888-1717, or go to theintentionallife.com. Thanks for your prayers. We have a special meeting today with our board of directors today and tomorrow, and the fact that you're praying for us and for the board, we appreciate it. All right, back to calls. Terry, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Randy. I love the program. It just touches me.
Thank you.
Just gives me God bumps all the time. I've listened to people talk about sibling rivalry, and I was telling Stephen earlier that my mom, we lost her in 2014, and she was kind of like the glue for the family, and it everything just kind of fell apart. I mean, my dad could even see it, you know, and it was in just troubling times for a lot of, and there's four of us, there's two girls, two boys. I've listened to Family Life Radio for going on 20 years now.
Great.
And thanks to Family Life Radio, thanks to my pastor, thanks to my Sunday school teacher, the ladies in my Sunday school class, a lot of good Christian people around me lifting me up has brought me through. It's been, you know, going on 10 years now. I am at a good place with my siblings, some better than others, some could be better, but I'm okay with that because I know that God holds my hand and he pulls me through. When I can't get up, he helps me to get up and he gets me going through the day.
Amen.
And he is alive in Family Life Radio. I mean, oh my goodness. I have so many people that I wish I could just sit them down and say, listen for 30 minutes and then tell me you'll never listen to it again.
Mm. We're putting you on our promotions team there, Terry. God bless you. I believe that. We talk about our 30-day challenge at the radio, starting the year with 30 days, listening to nothing but Family Life Radio or the Christian radio and the music. It'll change your life. We become what we think about. I believe that. I believe the same thing with intentional living. That's why we talk about one thing for 30 days. One thing for 30 days. Hey, can I close with that? What one thing? Here's a question. What one thing could you do for the next 30 days, every day, that might make a difference in a relationship with a sibling, adult sibling, but would certainly make a difference in your own life? Well, I don't know. Well, you could pray for your sibling every day. That would be one thing. Maybe every day, you would just send a little love note, card, text, or every other day and just say, hey, thinking of you today, praying for you, send them a verse, something to encourage them. Not preachy, just something you're sharing in your heart. Or maybe every day you pick one sibling and you've got multiple siblings. Every other day you're sending a note to them. You can think of it. What one thing could you do for 30 days that would make a difference, maybe in a relationship with a sibling, but certainly in your own life? And then do that one thing. That's intentional living. We're out of time today. Thank you for joining us on Facebook. Thank you, Gino. Stephen, thank you for producing all this, making it work. And of course, Jennifer, controlling all the everything in between, makes it work. I'm Dr. Randy for the entire Intentional Living family and team. God bless you for our support family. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for being with us. You all have a great day. We'll see you again tomorrow. I'll be back with more Intentional Living right here from our Intentional Living Center in Tucson, Arizona. Have a great day.